Welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Gals Podcast. Sharon Vornholt is your host and the creator of the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, where you will learn how to become a savvy real estate investor, make money, build streams of passive income, and create a lifestyle and a business you love. Whether you're a seasoned real estate investor or just getting started, this show is for you. Now, let's talk real estate investing.
This is Sharon Vornholt of the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog here today with another episode of Let's Talk Real Estate Investing. I'm really excited about this podcast today. My guest is Susan Lassiter-Lyons from Denver, Colorado, and we are going to talk about raising private money for your real estate investing business. Susan, as you probably know, is an expert when it comes to raising private money. She is also a real estate investor, an author, a coach, and she has created a number of products to help folks grow their real estate investing businesses. She's also the creator of a really popular blog called The Investor Insights. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you so much, Sharon, for having me.
Well, I'm really excited about this because people are, well, I remember the days when you could just walk into a bank and if you were breathing and you could get a loan to buy property, and it was really
pulse loans.
Yeah, it really was pretty much that easy. So long, you know, as you had a little bit of a business, but things have changed, and folks are scrambling for money. So I'm happy to have you on here to talk about that. But let's have you tell everyone a little bit about yourself and how you got started in real estate.
Sure. Wow, it's been a while now. It was back in 1994. I was working for Hertz Rent-A-Car. I've been in the rent-a-car business ever since college. I was like 5 years with Dollar Rent-A-Car, and then I was ultimately 11 years with Hertz Rent-A-Car, kind of working my way up the corporate ladder. But I always had this entrepreneurial streak, and one of the first things that I did in my spare time working at Hertz, because I was on the road and traveling quite a bit, was learn how to invest in stock options. Mm-hmm. And I did pretty well at investing in stock options, but then imagine my shock and dismay when I had to pretty much give back everything that I earned when I got the short-term capital gains bill, right? So talking to a friend of mine, and they said, you know, this investing is pretty cool, but, you know, if you're going to make that kind of cash, maybe you should look at real estate investing because that might be an easier way for you and a way to get a tax shelter through depreciation and lots of other, you know, cool things that we can do. And so I said, all right, that sounds cool. So I started, much like everybody else does, I think it was probably one night, late at night, Carlton Sheets came on TV and told me that I could make money in real estate with no money down. And so I ordered his, I think it was a VHS tape at that time, or maybe even a cassette tape, and studied just about everything he had and went to a lot of other seminars and read books and, I mean, you name it, and finally decided that I was going to take the leap. And my first investment actually was in tax liens. We decided to, here in Denver, a county right outside of the city called Arapahoe County, we went to the Arapahoe County tax lien auction and had absolutely no clue what we were doing, but we managed to win four liens, and three of them redeemed, and one of them still hasn't redeemed. We got the treasurer's deed to this really horrid piece of vacant property out in Boonies that's worth, I think, probably like $17. And it's, you know, kind of the joke. It's like you keep it in the portfolio just as a reminder in the future to make sure you always do your due diligence, right?
That's hilarious.
So that was how the empire was born.
Well, I think that's so interesting that, I talk to a lot of people, and they've all got a different way they got started. But I have to tell you, I wonder if Carlton Sheets has any idea how many real estate investing careers he's boosted. Everybody has had his old program, and I'm like you. Mine was so old, I'm not really sure if it was cassettes or I think it maybe it was cassettes. It was really old, though. And I look back on it sometimes. It sure sparked my interest, but I think of all those years he kind of set up on my shelf. If I'd only just gotten it out and really taken some action, things probably would have, I probably would have gotten started even a lot sooner. So you started out with with tax liens. That's interesting. Now, do you still do any tax lien investing?
I do not. No, I don't.
Okay, okay. Yeah, it seems like people move in and out of that strategy. So then what was your next strategy? Did you start to buy single-family homes, or did you move into commercial property?
Yeah, no, I started in residential investing. So first, you know, started out with residential lease options because that was a pretty risk-free and not very capital-intense way to get involved. And I just wanted to practice, you know, making offers, getting deals under contract, and leasing properties and putting tenants in without having a lot of my own money at risk. And so lease options gave me a really great way to do that in practice. And then I realized, you know, I'm not really making a whole lot of money in the spread, right, on that kind of sandwich lease option strategy that a lot of people use. And so I decided I'd obviously make a lot more money if I was the owner of the property. So that's when I decided that I was going to start investing in and do rehabs. And started out with single-family rehabs and then went into what we call residential multifamily rehabs. So the end of my multifamily career, I was investing in, like, duplexes, triplexes, and quads and rehabbing them and holding them long-term in the portfolio and putting tenants in.
Okay, okay. So you took, except for the whole tax lien thing, you took pretty much the same path that most people did. They started, seems like most of the people I talked to started with single-family homes. I think people understand single-family homes, and it gives them a basis of where to start.
Yeah.
So tell me about, at what point did you realize that you were going to need to learn to raise some private money for your business, that bank loans weren't going to be enough?
Mm-hmm. Pretty quickly, actually. You know, I was lucky in that when I first started investing, I had a job. I was still a W-2 employee. And so I could use that to qualify for conventional bank loans. When I decided to leave and open up my own company and become self-employed, then obviously that was kind of, it was a big shock that, hey, now you don't have a W-2 and now you're self-employed, and so you're going to have to jump through a bunch of other hoops in order to qualify. It was at that point when I realized, I probably just didn't do myself the biggest favor in terms of being able to get access to easy financing, even though I had done myself probably the greatest favor in, you know, making that leap to becoming a self-employed investor and mortgage company originator at that time. So it was very quickly, actually. And I was pretty lucky in that I really made it my first order of business to understand exactly how the financing worked, because I knew that that was going to be the biggest constraint in my business, that I wanted to know the inner workings of it and exactly how it all happened. And so I just kind of made that my mission to understand the ins and outs of it. And so I was really able to put together some interesting kind of custom programs for myself with local lenders that I call portfolio lenders before I even had the need to go to private money partners.
Now, I think one thing we kind of skipped over. Now, I knew that you had a mortgage company at one time, too. So I would think that would give you an edge when it came to understanding how financing, how all this works together in the big picture. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that's true. And, you know, it's not something that just happened on accident or by chance. It was something that was the path that I chose to go down. You know, when I just made the decision to leave Hertz, I was living in New York City, and just realized, you know, for a variety of reasons that my journey with Hertz had ended, and, you know, the biggest part of it was that I just didn't really feel like New York City was the place that I wanted to live. It was the right place to be for a couple of years. But, you know, I'm a Colorado girl, and the bottom line was that I just wanted to come home. And so when I came home, I knew that I was going to have to find something else to do. So I looked for an opportunity to be able to get paid to learn the mortgage business, I guess, is the best way to say it. And my sister worked for a mortgage company a national builder that's based here. And she said, well, you know, if you're looking for something to do while you're learning all this other stuff, just come on over and learn it from the ground up. And that was probably the best decision that I ever made. It was, you know, kind of humbling to kind of go from, you know, a director level position at a Fortune 100 company to an assistant sitting in a cubicle in secondary marketing at, you know, a mortgage company. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't trade it for the world with the education that I got.
Well, I was going to say, boy, that's if people only understood that that's what you have to do sometimes, what a valuable lesson that would be. Sometimes you absolutely have to step back and kind of start at the beginning, and that has obviously served you well in your business.
It really has. I mean, I knew that, you know, there were opportunities in funding real estate, and I knew that so many real estate investors were struggling with it. I figured that, you know, if I can figure this out, then I can solve the problem not only for myself, but for other real estate investors, you know, that I work with here in Denver. And so that was really the reason why I wanted to learn it and become an expert in it.
So while you were still working for the mortgage company, was that when you started to figure out for yourself or start to put together this whole idea that you were going to do the private money? Were you still working for the mortgage company at that time?
Mm-mm. No. When I was working at the mortgage company, you know, things were pretty decent. And, again, I had to insert myself into a situation where I was a W-2 employee again.
Mm-hmm.
So I started working with local portfolio lenders. And actually, I was introduced to a portfolio lender. It was a credit union down in Pueblo, which is in southern Colorado. It's about 2 hours south of Denver. And I met with her and explained what I wanted to do and what I was doing with rehabs. And we were able to just kind of, based on the strengths of the work that I'd done and the, you know, I guess the pitch that I was able to make her, she came up with a custom short-term rehab loan program that was basically 100% loan-to-cost rehab loan. But they didn't really make available to anybody else. She was like, I keep it on the down low, but because you're a friend of a friend and we like what you're doing and, you know, we can customize this program for you. And so I realized that, you know, this could be the ticket to kind of unlimited funding for my rehabs, but it wasn't like I had the opportunity to offer it to other people or, you know, continue its use. Unfortunately, after her auditors came in about 8 or 9 months later and said, hey, what's this crazy loan that you're doing that you don't have a charter to do? And they kind of put the kibosh on that pretty quickly. So it was at that point when that cash cow dried up that I realized, wow, I still want to be able to have this exact type of loan program. And since nobody else is offering it, I need to figure out a way to put it together myself. And that's when I started reaching out to raise capital from individuals to see if I could, you know, with their money, put that same loan program together and give them a great return.
Okay. Just for anybody that might not know what this is, explain what a portfolio lender is.
Sure. A portfolio lender is just a term that we use to describe a local lender, usually a small community or regional bank or credit union. We call them portfolio lenders because after they make a loan, they don't sell it off into the secondary markets. They don't securitize it and sell it off as a, you know, to the Wall Street buyers. What they do is they keep it in that loan in their own in-house portfolio, and they do their own servicing and so forth. So they keep it in-house. They don't sell it off.
Yeah, and that's still, you know, we still have banks like that here. You know, typically they're known to be the investor-friendly banks that will, they're just great to work with. I work with investors in my business that's their source of funding, and they can close a deal in 7 to 10 days as easily as if they had the cash in their bank account because they've built those relationships.
Absolutely. Yeah, portfolio lenders are, I mean, they're everywhere. And, you know, as long as you know exactly how to approach them and exactly what type of funding you're looking for, chances are pretty good that you'll be able to find one that will help you. I mean, anywhere from, you know, rehab loans to higher than average loan to value investor loans to cash out refinances that are in season to business lines of credit to, you know, something even awesome that we call like, you know, blanket loans or master loan commitments. So there's lots of opportunities to work with these portfolio lenders across the country.
Right. Let's talk about then, let's move on to your first time that you actually had to go to a, like more of a person, and to look for private money. First of all, how did you find that person?
At the Real Estate Investors Association meeting.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, that's where you need to go, right? It's like anybody who says, hey, I'm a real estate investor, I always say, well, what RIA do you go to? And if they say they don't go to one, then that's the first thing I suggest. You have to go to the RIA. right? Go to the meetings. That's where you can network with the people who are doing exactly what you're doing. You can learn from people. You can get great information there. Usually find great wholesalers, bird dogs, joint venture partners, and, ta-da, private money partners.
Mm-hmm. So what did your first private money deal look like?
It was for a duplex. Is it for a duplex that I was buying? No, I'm sorry. It was for a triplex. It was on a three-unit that I was buying to rehab, and it was a 100% loan-to-cost deal. I bought it for $199,000, and I think we put just like $40,000 to $50,000 into fixing it up. The private money partner had a total of $300,000 available to us, and, you know, it was just one of those synergistic meetings where, you know, he said, hey, what do you do? And I said, well, I do these residential multifamily rehabs. And he says, I said, what do you do? And he says, well, I'm just looking for a way to get some cash flow from my retirement funds without having to do much work. And so, you know, I said, well, I think I can help you with that. And so we sat down and talked about what I did. And it basically was structured as a 100% purchase. So we're able to roll in 100% of the purchase price, 100% of the closing cost, and all of the repair funds that we needed in order to do the deal. And then he got paid back through what we call a rate and term refinance, where we were just, you know, paying off the existing financing, not taking any cash out, but just putting it into permanent financing to hold in our portfolio long term.
That's a great thing to for folks to really realize there's a lot of money in RIA clubs. A lot of people that have made money. Some in my club, some of the people that are a little bit older, they've made a lot of money in real estate, and now they are private lenders, and that's just one more way they make money. It always kind of blows me away when people say, oh, I'm not going to my RIAs, nothing but a bunch of people in there that don't know anything, because that is just absolutely not true in most areas.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, you look at kind of the demographic makeup or, you know, the experiential makeup of any RIA meeting at any given time, and it kind of comes down to the 80-20 rule, right? It's like
right.
If there are 100 people in the room, there probably are 80 people who either have never done a deal or are just there for entertainment value. it's probably the 20% of the people that are there that are really actually actively pursuing real estate and doing deals and investing.
Right. So once you, let's say you've looked at your RIA and you want to expand the sphere of private money that you might be able to go after, I hear people tell me stories about how they're just sitting at their dentist and they'll say, what do you do? And, you know, what do you do? And then that investor will say, well, I do just what you said. I'm a real estate investor and I do this. And the dentist said back to them, well, you know, I've got some money I'd like to loan. So how do, let's talk a little bit about how folks might identify private money lenders in their area or in their sphere of influence that they might not even know are potentially private money lenders.
Right. There are basically three buckets, if you want to call them that. That's kind of what I refer to them as, three buckets of potential private money partners. And I like to call them partners versus lenders, because I think
right.
when we call them a lender, it puts us into a psychological position that kind of affects our confidence a little bit in a negative way, in my opinion.
That's a great, way to put it.
So the first bucket of potential private money partners is always going to be your network. It's your friends, your family, your acquaintances, the people that you come in contact with just through the course of your everyday life. And so, you know, your example of the dentist, that would be an example of someone being in your network that you could share your opportunity with. The next bucket is people who are already investing in real estate, right? So that's the main reason to go to the RIA, so that you can surround yourself with people who are doing exactly what it is that you are doing so that they understand the investment. And then the third bucket is people who are already making private loans on real estate. So those are the existing private lenders. And if they're doing more than just one or two occasionally, they probably have set themselves up, you know, in doing this as a business. And so there's a kind of a morph that happens with that bucket where they go very quickly from being a private lender to a hard money lender because they realize, hey, I can charge, you know, big points and higher interest rates by loaning hard money instead of just, you know, being a private money lender. And that's really the distinction between a private lender and a hard money lender. But the dentist situation is, the thing that I try to tell people is, you know, let's not, it's kind of like in sales, the concept of the assumptive close, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're a salesperson, like if you're selling vacuum cleaners door to door, you know, you're under the assumption that every single door that you knock on needs a vacuum cleaner, right?
Right.
They absolutely need a vacuum cleaner. The question is, are they going to buy yours or are they going to buy someone else's? So it's kind of an assumptive close. Like, great, here's the vacuum cleaner. You need a vacuum cleaner. Let's make this happen. With private money, I think we do ourselves a disservice because we have a tendency to prejudge people, especially those people that we know, to make the decision on their behalf based on our own beliefs or filters or experiences with them as to whether or not they, quote-unquote, have the money to mm-hmm. invest with us. And I, you know, I wish I had a dime for every time somebody said to me, I don't know anybody with any money, and then I help them get over that mindset issue, and then they come back, you know, in shock, like, oh, my God, it worked. My Aunt Millie, you know, just signed a commitment for $600,000 for an apartment building. It's like, of course, you know. I sometimes pretend like I'm surprised, but deep down I'm kind of rolling my eyes going, told you so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You need to believe in yourself. So I think it's just, you know, that's probably the biggest mistake that people make. Money is all around us, and, you know, Everybody, I don't care who they are, you know, has access to money. Even the homeless guy sitting on the corner, it's not somebody that you want to pitch on your deal, but you know what? He knows somebody with money and could potentially make a referral, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great point to make because I think we do tend to pre-qualify people, and we mm-hmm. tend to think, well, it let's face it, it's not always obvious who's got a lot of money because people who have a lot of money very often don't appear to have a lot of money.
They right. yeah.
they don't have big cars and big houses and whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, I always tell this my cousin Clay story about. You know, I have a cousin, and he is, I mean, just, he's salt of the earth, just such a great guy. I love my cousin Clay. But, you know, he didn't have the easiest life. He and his girlfriend got married when they were 18 years old, like as soon as they graduated from high school. She, at that time, was pregnant with their second child. So they had three kids very, very quickly. He had to go to work. She had to go to work. You know, he went to work in a restaurant as a baker and worked his way up to managing a kind of a plant that makes pies and desserts for a local grocery store chain. And his wife is a housekeeper. And, you know, they have a fine house. They have cars that are older. And I took my mom back to Kansas City where they live when Clay's mom passed away, my Aunt Lenora. And after the funeral, you know, Clay was like, so you're still investing in real estate? I'm like, yeah. And he goes, man, I wish you'd let me know how I could get involved with that. And, you know, for so many years, I've kind of made the decision on Clay's behalf that he wasn't qualified to invest in my deals because it was my assumption that he didn't mm-hmm. have any money, right, based mm-hmm. on what
right.
I knew about him and observed. And, again, when he made that comment, I kind of blew him off. I'm like, yeah, well, you know, it's cool, but, you know, don't worry about it. It is what it is, and, you know, kind of blew it off. And he said, well, you know, if you ever are looking to somebody for somebody to come in on any of your deals, I sure wish you'd let me have an opportunity because, you know, the girls are all through college now. The house is completely paid off. Jeannie has maxed out her 401K. I've maxed out my 401K, and we're just looking for places to put cash.
Wow. Wow. Who knew?
Oh, my God. I'm an idiot. Right? I mean, not only did I feel like a complete jerk because I, you know, I'm like, man, all along I could have been, you know, using his capital to invest in deals and he could have been making a return. But even more, I felt like a bigger jerk because I was prejudiced against him in a way. Mm-hmm. My assumption was that he didn't have any money and I felt really, really bad for judging him that way.
You know, it's just so easy to do, to get these preconceived notions. I was, a few years back, I was working with an investor. We were doing some deals together, and I was actually finding them, and he was maybe buying some of them. And one time he said to me, and now Mark was, he was probably in his 20s then. And he said, well, why don't you ask her this, whatever it was? And I said, oh, she's not going to do that. And he said, do you realize you prejudge what people are going to say? And I said, no. And he said, you don't know what she's going to say until you ask her. Just go in with the idea that you have no idea. And from that, and I asked her whatever it was. And she said, sure. And, you know, it's this kind of thing, well, I told you so. But we just have the tendency to take our preconceived ideas and inflict them on other people. And it's, we just shouldn't do that, should we?
No, we most definitely should not do that for a variety of reasons. You know, and I look back at the opportunities that he could have been involved with me, and, you know, he could have used his money to make a really great return on his money, even more than he, you know, could from their 401ks or their IRAs. And so it's, you know, just keep an open mind about everybody, because you just absolutely have no idea what someone has or what they don't have.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about how to approach a potential private money partner. You certainly don't go up to them and say, hey, you got any money you want to loan me? So how do you start that conversation?
Well, definitely not that way. So if you just took that note, please cross it out no, it's, you know, it all comes down to building relationships. And I know that in today's immediate gratification society, this is something that people don't like to hear. In fact, when I teach people, you know, I have a program that teaches people how to raise private money, and sometimes I'll laugh because people will ask for a refund. And I'll say, well, you know, why? Was there a problem with the strategies and what's happening? And they're like, oh, it's just going to take too long in order to get the result, in order to raise the capital. And what they're talking about is that there is a period that needs a time that needs to elapse for you to build an effective relationship with someone. And that's really what this is. Just like, you know, you're never going to walk up to someone and say, like you said, hey, do you have any money that you want to loan me for real estate? That's the easiest way to not get invited back to a party ever. But it's all about, you know, sharing with people very succinctly and in an enticing manner what it is that you're doing, giving them the opportunity to ask you more about it, and then getting to know them to see, if they'd be a suitable partner, and if you think that they could be, then making an appointment to sit down with them at some point in the future and, you know, kind of go over that opportunity with them.
Mm-hmm.
So what I like to do, for example, you know, kind of going back to your dentist scenario, when people are like, hey, what do? I usually say I put together lucrative real estate investment deals so that my partners make safe, consistent profits. And when I say that, it usually gets one of two reactions. Either people will say, really, how do you do that? Or they'll say, oh, that's interesting. How can I get involved in that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a perfect opening or segue to be able to say, well, you know what, let's get together at some point and, you know, sit down and have some coffee or whatever, and I can tell you a little bit more about what I'm doing, and I can find out a little bit more about you and see if there's a fit.